Radio Harmony Cornuai. Join me, Clark 80, every Wednesday at 10:15 a.m. or at 18:15 on Saturdays to hear interesting interviews with some fascinating people. And remember, things always go better with a little harmony in your life.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Lavite to Clark. I've been very excited to do this show since Dr. Elaine Kissel, my special guest today, decided to be a participant. You'll see why as this interview unfolds. I'm talking to Elaine Kissel from her office in the United States today.
Lavite to Clark with your host, Clark 80. Enjoy interesting interviews in English with fascinating people from our area and beyond. Another reason why things always go better with a little harmony in your life.
L'invité de Clark, c'est mercredi à 10h15 et samedi à 18h15.
Hello, Dr. Kissel. It's so nice to have you on L'invité de Clark.
Well, thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
I'm sure our listeners will be intrigued by your story, so I want to begin at the beginning. And you can tell me, please, a little more about yourself, your family background, maybe where you were raised. You have that distinctive non-American accent, so I know it was someplace else. Anything that might stand out from that time as you grew up and started back in England?
Well, I was born during World War II and or just before World War II. And, you know, I had a lot of, I still have a lot of memories, you know, from those experiences. We were in an air raid shelter and we had a time bomb on the top of our air raid shelter, so we had to evacuate quickly. Things like that stand out in my mind. But then we moved to the country, way out in the country. It was very primitive, but my mother was very good at making it very comfortable and easy for us. So, you know, that was very, very early, because my age, you know, that's a long, long, long time ago.
Well, it is, but talking about an impressive set of memories to have something like that happen to you at a young age, I just can't imagine, really. Where did you go in England? I know that it's a story with a lot of kids that they were sent out of London, but where did you go in particular?
We went to a place that was called Old Bradwell, and it was way, way out in the country. And the house that we had, it was a cottage, two-family cottage, and there was no electricity, no gas, no nothing, and it was very primitive. But my mother managed to deal with it very well, and so we didn't find it difficult. But it was a very beautiful area, and I have happy memories from it.
Oh, sure, yeah. Now, your father, was he called into service during the war?
No. No, my father came from Russia, and he was, you know, quite a lot older than my mother, so he was almost like a grandfather. So,
mm-hmm.
But, yeah. My mother was very brilliant and up to date with everything, and very good at helping us keep our minds open and not develop any prejudices, although we experienced plenty of prejudice.
Yes, I'm sure you did, and that's a shame. And it starts very young, unfortunately. But let's jump to your current profession, because I think that's a fascinating thing. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you do, and we'll talk more about what that's all about when you finish giving us a little description.
Well, I'm a hypnotherapist, but I'm also a mind trainer, and I'm not limited to hypnosis. So, excuse me, I don't just use hypnosis in my practice. I use anything that's going to work for each individual. I create methods and use methods that other people may use, but I don't have a standardized prescripted approach as a lot of hypnotists do. And my approach to the therapy is to dig it up at the roots. In other words, not just give suggestions in hypnosis, but I work with people to resolve all of the issues that are causing them the symptoms that they're experiencing. So it's a very in-depth, comprehensive approach.
Well, you know, when you talk about hypnotism, many things come to mind. One of the things that comes to mind for me is the battle against addictions. Mm-hmm. And how prevalent is that in your practice?
It's pretty common. A lot of addictions, not just to alcohol, but other things. They're very complex issues for people, and most of the practices that work with it don't get dig deep enough to find out what the root causes are, as well as everything else. So my approach is considered to be much more effective, and it is. So, because I don't just do standardized prescripted hypnosis.
I say, well, that's a tremendous thing because, as you say, everybody's going to be different. And to get to the bottom of some of these things, it's very much like a labyrinth, I would think.
Yes, but one of the wonderful things that we have with hypnosis is being able to use it to help people go deep within themselves and get inside awareness and understanding of their issues. Or normally people don't get that deep into that inside awareness and understanding in classical therapy.
No, and we're not very encouraged to do that in general everyday life these days, with every moment seems to be filled, or people are trying to fill it with various things that you come across in the media and that sort of thing. It's hard sometimes for people, I suppose, in their work schedules and even in their quieter time to do that if they have a notion to do it at all. You're right. So you're telling me really that there's no typical client in that sense. You have to tailor make.
Exactly.
Your
I don't do prescripted, and I don't assume anything about person. Before people come to me, we do an evaluation, and I learn a lot about them through the evaluation and what I need to do to enable them to succeed in healing and changing their behaviors or whatever. So it gives me that it, that hypnosis doesn't start until we actually do the therapy. The first step is an evaluation, and I learn everything I need to know about a client and what's going to be the best approach, how much therapy they're going to need.
Do you think that for the average client, there's a certain kind of fear factor going into it? Are they afraid they're going to reveal something, or are they afraid that they're going to get stuck in whatever world that hypnotherapy takes them to?
Not usually. That's not a common thing. It's not something totally rare. But before people come to me, they're properly educated anyway, so it's they have a better attitude and approach to the whole thing. And I
Yeah.
will admit this, that many people think that hypnosis is a quick fix, which if it was, there wouldn't be any problems in the world anymore, right? So it's not a quick fix, but it is something that's a permanent positive change.
Yeah.
It's not like psychotherapy where you go on and on and on and on.
It's really just it's a process, which is really what it is. And it can take a few sessions or quite a few sessions to get to the bottom of some of these things. As you say, the complexity of the brain and the complexity of people's experience, it's just an amazing thing to me to think about it. And there you are out there helping people. You know, one of the things I remember in reading about you and talking to you from time to time was this wonderful book you put out called The Mind is Willing. And I've had a chance to go through that book. And there are a number of steps that you outline in there. It's called the Chain of Command. In command. And I think that's fascinating. You mind if I read a few of those? I think people might be interested in
Yeah,
how
go ahead.
you approach some of that. One of the things that you start out with, which I think is super important, is that you have to assume responsible, positive, conscious control for your subconscious mind. Now, the subconscious mind, I think you told me that that is the center of the hypnotherapy process. You go to that level to get the changes in attitude or the uncovering of issues that people have.
Well, I work with the conscious and the subconscious. The subconscious mind is the rest of you. The conscious mind doesn't manage all of the details and everything. The subconscious does. Everything about you exists in your subconscious, past and present, and maybe the future. The interesting thing is that the subconscious mind is brilliant. It's powerful. But it has also become the servant, and it knows better than the boss, but How many times, for example, have you had a little bit of an argument in yourself, within yourself, about something, and that the idea comes to mind, that's not a good idea, and you want to argue with it, but your subconscious is very wise. It knows exactly what's going on, and it would advise you, but you're the boss. So what I teach in my mastery, and what I do, is how to be a better boss.
You know, that's a very good point. To think about when we think about the subconscious, we think about all those sort of hidden things, but actually, it's kind of a message center, isn't it, for the conscious mind to take action or to do something that maybe it can't do by itself. How would you describe that relationship between the unconscious and conscious when you have those kind of arguments with yourself?
Well, the problem is for the majority of people, the conscious mind overrules the subconscious. And so the problems that people continue to suffer, are not resolved. But once we get the conscious and subconscious working together as they're supposed to, then we resolve the issues on all
Yeah,
levels of consciousness.
that's quite a process indeed. I'm speaking today with Dr. Elaine Kissel, who's done a lifetime of work in the area of hypnotherapy and is the author of the book The Mind is Willing. What impact or what relation do dreams have with what you're talking about in terms of the subconscious? Is that a message from the subconscious when you have a dream?
Very often, yes. Very, very often, the subconscious is communicating. The thing is people don't always understand because the subconscious is speaking in its own language. So we have to learn to decipher and understand what that is. But when people share their dreams with me, a lot of times there's the answer to the questions that we've been asking. Subconscious knows everything to know about you. The
Wow, it's
thing
very.
is the dreams, the subconscious speaking fluently in its own language.
Because is
We
that
have
sort of
to
a
learn to decipher.
symbolic language, would you say?
A lot of the times it is, yes. Yeah. The symbolism is based on each individual. So it's not everybody's just going to get exactly the same meaning from the same symbol.
Oh, that's interesting too. Yeah, so it's something that has to be the individual has to sort of decide for himself or herself with your help, maybe, what
Right.
that symbol represents.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as everybody would like to think. A lot of people bring books to me and show me what they've been reading, that there where somebody's written a book about how to interpret your dreams, not at all accurate in the 99% of the time.
Yeah, that's right. There are certainly a lot of books out there for that. But one of the other things that you're talking about in your links in the chain of command is that from this moment on, you're to take full responsibility for yourself and everything that happens to you, physically, mentally, and emotionally. Now, that's quite a powerful statement to take responsibility for things that people often feel, I'm sure, victimized by instead. Is that what you find?
Well, they do feel victimized, but because it's not the subconscious intention to do that, but it's often doing its best to communicate what the issue is and get the conscious mind to deal with things in a much better way.
Well,
That's
I'm sure
the
that a lot of people are looking for, like you say, a quick fix, and to take responsibility is a pretty big step.
right. If there was a quick fix, believe me, it would be out there. There wouldn't
Yes,
be
I'm
any
kidding.
trouble.
Well, there are many promises of quick fixes, but you're right. To actually see one would be something. Where are most of your clients originating? Are they from the USA or from Europe?
No, I got people, clients from all over the world, actually. And so that's something that, as long as they can speak English, work with them. And I have people from a lot of other places in the world. Years ago, before we had this kind of thing where we had the video communications, I couldn't, I would work with people over the phone. But ideally, I would get them to come in to the center and at least get some communicative response in live. But
Yeah.
it's possible that I did get many people from foreign countries who could speak English.
Well, I imagine to have a face-on-face sort of look at people while you're doing this would help you in your practice.
It does. It makes a big difference to have the visual connection. However, it wasn't that I couldn't understand what they were saying and detect from that, many, many useful bits of information.
We're out of time today, but listen next week when we continue with part two of my interview with this fascinating woman, Elaine Kissel, Dr. Elaine Kissel. Join me next week and see you then.
L'invité de Clark with your host, Clark Ady. Enjoy interesting interviews in English with fascinating people from our area and beyond. Another reason why things always go better with a little harmony in your life.
L'invité de Clark, c'est mercredi à 10h15 et samedi à 18h15.